Bylaw, everybody.
Hi, Bylaw, one and all. Welcome to I Hate It, But I Love It. I am Jocelyn Getty.
I am Kat Angus, and this is the podcast about all the pop culture you love and hate simultaneously is the word that I almost forgot. Wow.
Maybe it's because you did not love and hate this simultaneously, and you favored one emotion more than the other.
We are talking about 1998's The Man in the Iron Mask.
A movie that, as a teen, I was like, yes, yes, put it in my eyeballs. And then watching it as an adult, I was like, interesting. Interesting to revisit this experience.
Well, and like, some listeners may not remember or have been alive for that, like, this was Leonardo DiCaprio's first big movie after, like, Titanic came out. Or right. one of them, because I know The Beach also came out in a similar time.
No, you are right that it was the first big movie after Titanic came out. And I think, I mean, gosh, it's so interesting to think that this is how, you know, if not movie releases used to work, at least Titanic worked. Titanic was in theaters for a full year.
Yeah.
So,
and it was like at the top, like there were times when it like lost money and then made more money the week after, which never happens.
Never happens. And so this, I think it was in theaters for a full like 54 weeks or something. Oof. And then Man in the Iron Mask debuted in the number 2 spot behind it. Mm. And even though it is not a very good movie at all, in the immortal spirit of a rising tide lifts all ships, I think Titanic's proximity to it meant everyone was like, yeah, I'll see that too. Why not?
It's got Leonardo DiCaprio in it.
It can't be bad. It can't be. I would love to know. What are your macro feelings?
So I didn't see this till a few years after it came out. Until a couple years after it came out, because I had talked myself out of having a crush on Leonardo DiCaprio. Because this was our thing of just like, well, I don't have a shot because everyone wants him. That's what's standing between me and him. The number of other people who like him.
Yep, absolutely.
So like when this one was coming out, I was like, well, I don't have a crush on Leonardo DiCaprio, so there's really no reason for me to see this. And so it wasn't until a few years later and I watched it and I was like, this is not a great follow-up for Leonardo.
No.
It's not great. Just like, some people are French, some people are British, some people are full-on American, but everyone's French.
Yep.
Oh, man. It's all over the place. And, like, I just wish it were a little more entertaining, and I wish I cared a little bit more about the Three Musketeers.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
And then, like, at the end, they're like, good, we solved everything. I'm like, but neither of them should have been king.
You've made things arguably worse.
Yeah.
I think.
And then also a very funny just 80-yard line at the end to sort of, like, wrap something up that didn't really need wrapping up. But we'll get to that later.
Yes, indeed.
How is it watching this time?
Oh, I mean, I completely agree with everything you've just said. It had the feeling, watching it again, of, you know, that feeling when you've seen a movie mostly in chunks on TV, you've always come in at the second act or like right at the ending. And you tell yourself, someday I've really got to sit through this movie just front to back. And then when you finally do, you realize like, oh, I wasn't really missing very much. Like, it did sort of
I filled in the blank pretty well.
And I think I filled it in better than the movie does. It really had that feeling to me where I was like, I can't believe there isn't more. And I can't believe it isn't better than it is. I do think it's a lot of great actors. A lot of great actors. And sometimes those great actors are able to elevate a script that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Love that voice you just did.
Tom Waits.
Welcome to the podcast.
I lost it immediately. It's gone. It's immediately gone. But yeah, it's just, I agree with you that I also wish I cared about the Three Musketeers.
Yep.
The way they choose to introduce them in this film, which isn't, even though they did an adaptation of The Three Musketeers in 1993, this has no connection to that whatsoever. No. So it's a very strange treatment of that entire story, which I'd love to get into. I gotta tell you, right off the hop, I mean, I don't know if this is where I am in my life right now, but I looked at that Iron Mask and I thought, it looks great in there. I want that.
Oh, to have no worries? and then I don't have to show my face to anybody for the rest of my life?
Are you kidding me? This is bliss.
Oh my God. I don't have to pay rent on this place. I'm in Paris.
I'm living in Paris.
I'm almost in the palace, to
I'm
be
not
sure.
I'm spending a cent on makeup or hair care. Every day I get as much baguette as I want. And once a day I see the moon. I mean, it seems great. I don't know what his problem is. I'd wear a bucket on my head tomorrow. Tomorrow, Cass.
What are you complaining about?
Get over yourself, Philippe. So that's neither here nor there. I just really, I think that also affected my enjoyment where I was like, I don't know what he's bitching and moaning about. I could do that later today. Should you see Man in the Iron Mask?
No.
It's a hard one to go back and visit if you...
If you have any love for it, don't revisit it. Just love it in your heart.
Yes.
If you've never seen it, you're not going to like it.
Yes. But, you know, if you happen to be a teenager when Titanic came out.
Is it 1998 and Titanic, you just came out of Titanic in the theater and you're like, oh, a screening of Man in the Iron Mask is about to start.
Then congratulations on besting the quantum space-time continuum and hi-vee into Man in the Iron Mask, you 13-year-old in the year 1998.
Living your best life.
You are
enjoy that
it.
Delia's catalog.
Oh my God. And don't forget to spritz on some bottled emotions perfume. My favorite one. Is playful, I think. Or was it pensive? I can't remember.
I wore a lot of Baby Soft at that time just because there was a lot of magazine ads, and I was like, that sounds good, sure.
Oh, man. For anyone who this is not resonating with, just understand that in the year 1998, we all bought our perfume from either a clothing store or your local pharmacy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We loved it. We loved it.
I remember being so surprised to find out that there were stores that just had makeup. I'm like, but you buy your makeup at the drugstore.
I had a similar feeling.
I was so surprised. And they're like, right, but that's not good. I'm like, it's not good.
It's not good.
But that's where the makeup is.
You're telling me that $3 is a good value? I'm smearing this shit on my face all day long. Is that why I'm breaking out all day long? We will get into the makeup, I guess.
The Man in the Iron Mask.
Right now. So this is very, very, very loosely based on the final volume of a sequel to The Three Musketeers. Mm-hmm. It basically picks up with the Three Musketeers at the end of their lives and careers as they discover that the Man in the Iron Mask, who is a real historical figure, is actually a twin brother of Louis the King.
And Louis sucks.
And Louis sucks dick. So they decide to do a switcheroo to depose him.
Mm-hmm.
And then hijinks
shenanigans.
Ensue.
Yeah.
Shenanigans and hijinks ensue. I want to go just, I loved your point about everyone having different accents. It really did make me giggle, and I have to say I didn't mind it, but it did make me laugh a lot.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm not mad, but I feel like with one of these, like, you have to, I understand when people are annoyed when they're like, oh, like, why do they have English accents if they're French or whatever? Like, I get being upset about it. I don't mind it so much, but I feel like you got to pick one accent and stick with it for everybody. Mm-hmm. So either everyone speaks English with a French accent, or they all or they all have a British accent, or they're all American. You got to pick one of them.
I mean, I think a part of it, too, is that nobody is going to tell Chicagoan John Malkovich what to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. You want John Malkovich in your movie? He's going to do whatever the fuck he wants.
He will not even look at the other actors in the shot most of the time.
What I love is, like, for this movie, which is a period film, he's like, absolutely not. And then Rounders, he's like, I will go so over the top with this accent that you will hate it. And I'm like,
oh, wow. God.
Like, so you can do it. He just absolutely did not want to.
He's Russian in Rounders, is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Well, in the scariest of scare quotes, he's Russian.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a good pull. I'd totally forgotten that he did that in Rounders, and it makes his choice here even funnier.
I think he might even play that same character on Billions.
What?
I might be wrong, but I know he played another Russian on Billions, and I can't I think somebody said that they were the same character, but that might have been just, like, headcanon for people.
I think it probably is it. I probably is headcanon, but listeners, let us
tell
know.
Us.
Are the movie Rounders and the show Billions related? If so, how?
Explain. Anyway.
You know what I will say, though, is that I do think the different accent choices by everyone does sort of immediately lay bare, I think, the biggest problem with the movie, which is that everyone's in a different movie from one another. Especially Gerard Depardieu, who's playing Porthos. But he has been tasked with all of the comedy, all of it. And the comedy is pitched so much younger than everything else that you see.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the vast majority of it is a lot of, you know, guilt and making up for past actions and, you know, suicide and difficult things. And then Porthos's entire thing is that he's upset about aging. And every time you see him, he's like, I can't get my dick up. I'm so old. And then he farts or falls down or a bird poos on him or something. It's so broad.
Yeah. Like an entire thing of just like, like, what's better than a woman's nipple in my mouth? And they're like, forgiveness. And he's just like, I don't think so. Waka waka.
What's better than a nipple in my mouth? Forgiveness. Oh, okay.
We are having two different conversations right now.
I see that we're in the same place and we're not communicating at all. Do you think Gerard Depardieu and Jeremy Irons looked at the scripts and they were like, it's been lovely meeting you. I don't even think we need to work together too closely on our characterizations.
I mean, Jeremy Irons, look, okay, like, I don't like what he's doing, but at least Gerard Depardieu has something to do. Poor Jeremy Irons. They're just like, and you're the other one.
Yeah, you're loosely
the smart. He's
the
Kevin Jonas of the Musketeers.
Wait, Kevin Jonas was the smart one?
I mean, like, the leftover one of the Jonas Brothers.
You are really assuming a lot of knowledge on my part about the Jonas
But also,
Brothers.
He's Kevin Jonas seems like the most emotionally healthy out of all of them. So
oh,
good for
well,
him.
Oh, there you go. Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, I think Aramis has a bigger role in the book.
Sure.
I think it's largely about him trying to become the Pope.
Sure. Yeah.
In my loose research about this, it does seem like a lot of Three Musketeers adventures are about them hoping to become a pope or a king and doing a lot of stuff that does not lead to them becoming a pope.
Sure.
Or a king.
Yeah.
But I do agree. It is a waste of his talents. He really doesn't get that much to do, which is unfortunate. And
also, how bad is your movie when you're like, Gerard Depardieu will provide the comic relief?
Well, I feel like, to French people, Gerard Depardieu, of course, means something so different.
Yes,
I mean,
for sure.
Every time we in North America have gone to see him, he's falling down a flight of stairs with a baguette, farting every step that he falls.
Yeah.
But over there, I think he's the king. Right?
He's like, why am I not playing the king in this when I am king of France already? That's my Gerard Depardieu impression.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Bonjour.
I was behind it. John Malkovich's whole thing is that he has retired. He has a son that he loves very much, played by a young Peter Sarsgaard.
Very young. I was like, oh, hello.
Very cute. Very young. Raoul is sent to the front lines by Louis, who's horny for Raoul's would-be fiancé.
Yeah.
He is immediately killed. Athos tries to get revenge, immediately fails, and then becomes a surrogate father to Philippe when he's let out of the Iron Mask.
Yeah, which is just like, I don't know if that's how it works, just because you both lose people.
I mean, they're like, we might as well do something.
Yeah. I need a buddy. Do you want to be my friend? Yeah, all right.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, we're both physically here, so we might as well.
And also, like, the accent thing really just comes across so funny. Funnily, when, like, Peter Sarsgaard doing his just most American accent, mm-hmm. being like, hello, father, here is my soon-to-be fiancée, Christine. And she's like, hello, I am his fiancée.
We are both from the same area of Paris.
We have known each other since we were born. He's like, sure thing, babe.
And then here comes
John
Malkovich.
Gives a thumbs up like they did back then.
Yeah, with a big foam finger. John Malkovich really comes in pronouncing all of his R's. You're going back to war? You? War? At the front of the war?
And then I guess Gabriel Byrne is doing an English accent rather than his Irish accent. So he's like, I do have to do an accent. And they're like, a French one? And he's like, no.
He kind of pointed back at them and was like, what are you guys doing?
So
I think I can do whatever I want. I'm pretty sure. Now, I do believe that Leonardo DiCaprio was nominated for a Razzie for his performance as both of the princes.
He's not very good at this. It feels like he's checked out for a lot of it.
I think I agree. And I mean, I would say from my perspective, I would say part of it is a lot of problems with the script because the script is truly not very good a lot of the time. A lot of the time what they're saying is just bluntly stating their feelings about things. And it makes everyone come across as stupider than they are actually as actors. I mean, sometimes when I contrast his performance as Louis and his performance as Philippe, who is a very fragile, timid little guy, despite having the blissful experience of being in an iron mask, there's some subtle little nuances in there where I'm like, oh, I can see that this is good work, but I do agree that a lot of the time he isn't as good as he could be because the script isn't helping him out.
It's not helping him out. I think also, like, and again, this is just my thing, like, I think the American accent in this setting just really...
It throws you off
and, like, just really highlights that he's not, like, that this is a movie and just takes me out of it.
That's totally fair. I mean, I feel like I am the one who is always like, if you can't sing... Don't. If you can't do the accent, forget it. Yeah, so sure. It totally makes sense that for you, who does not feel that way, you would be like, but it is bad that they're not. And it is bad that they're not. It is. Yeah. It is bad that they're not.
There's a lot the bad thing. Here. Well, and like, so we find out partway through the movie. So Gabriel Byrne, who is D'Artagnan, he has been like the head of the king's security for many years. And the original king has died maybe 6 years ago. But it turns out that King Louis is actually D'Artagnan's son because he's been having an affair with the queen. And they're both his twins. And like you have things of just like D'Artagnan saying to me, like, I have hoped every day for you to become the king that we all want you to be. And I was like, well, you guys really fucked up with this. Like, you were around the whole time. What did you teach him?
This is your fault. This is kind of on you.
How did he become this way if you're around and you're this great guy and you wanted to like raise him to be a good man?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yes, this is one of many reasons why the plan to switch one out for the other holds absolutely no water.
And don't get me wrong, I fully understand that you can raise a kid and do everything right and they still turn out to be a monster. But like, that doesn't seem like what it's about here. It really seems like he just dropped the ball.
It seems like everyone dropped the ball.
Because Philippe has never met him, it seems like maybe D'Artagnan should have stayed the fuck out of it and maybe King Louis would have grown up better.
Is this a D'Artagnan problem? In which case, I mean, he dies at the end, so problem solved.
And by when that happened, I was just like, sure, okay.
Well, not enough has happened. I mean, the way the plan is executed is incredibly funny because there's so much emphasis on training Philippe how to impersonate Louis, not how to be a king.
Just how to
impersonate him.
Which ends up not really mattering at all.
No, it doesn't matter at all. And then when the plan fails, they're like, well, we might as well die.
Yeah, right?
It's very fun.
Also, I want to get to this plan to kidnap Louis. We'll jump around in this movie. But like, this part made me laugh so hard. So they know that the man in the iron mask is in the prison.
Yeah.
And so they disguise Gerard Depardieu as like an old priest, old fat priest who just sort of dawdles around.
Yeah.
And they get him into the cell. And then when they close the door behind him, he sort of like unhooks a dead body from underneath his cloak that he's just been carrying around down there.
Yes.
And there he's like, okay, so now you will, I guess, hide under my, like, do you think this live man was just sort of like grabbing onto his torso his whole way down and just hoping he didn't slip or let go, just like with all his might, just holding on?
Yes, I do think that, Kat, and I have to confess something embarrassing.
What?
I like it.
What?
I like that that's the plan. I think it's cute.
Explain.
I just think it's cute that he has to curl up underneath his dress and get carried out of jail.
It is the most, like... You're just giggling over how cute it is.
It is.
But it's so, like, for, you would expect, like, for the, like, this plot of the movie, to, for a big chunk of it to be, like, the heist of this prisoner.
No, you're right.
And the plan is so simple and stupid. Where they're just like, we hide a dead body under your cloak, then the real guy just grabs on. And you just gotta walk very carefully. Which he doesn't.
Yeah, he's bumping into everything. Yeah. I think it's actually Jeremy Irons, though. I don't think it's Gerard Depardieu.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, he's wearing a fake nose.
Okay.
Which also begs the question, how does he have access to MI6 grade prosthesis?
Right?
And just he can whip off and not, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Like a sense, no.
Well, you know what I think is a big problem here is the audience's lack of familiarity, at least with the way that the Three Musketeers are going to operate in this movie. Mm. It was sort of, it didn't really occur to me until halfway through the second act where I was like, wow, they actually haven't set up anything at all.
Mm.
Who, you know, obviously I know who the Three Musketeers are, but for anyone who doesn't, who they are.
Oh, yeah.
What point in their life they are at, why they're at that point in their life, what they would have access to, what they don't, how they are held in other people's esteem or how they aren't. You don't know anything.
Yeah, this movie really assumes that you have a level of knowledge that I don't think people necessarily have today.
I completely agree. I mean, I really, really would compare it to watching Avengers Endgame first, when all of the characters are a little bit, you know, sad sacky and feeling bad about themselves.
Yeah.
And that's where you come in. But having everyone be like, they're the best heroes. And you're like, I'm not seeing it.
What is this?
I don't understand how or what or why they are doing anything that they're doing. And certainly I think that comes into bear in the heist, such as it is. The walk.
It's like being like our heist and you just go in and just like scoop a bunch of chips into your hoodie and then just walk on out.
I'm pregnant.
I'm pregnant.
Oh.
My baby goes ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Yeah, my baby crinkles a lot. I mean, every baby does. Every baby does. It's very normal. Yeah, you're like, is this good for them? Is this bad? Is this a decline in their abilities? Is it not?
For sure. And like, they're making the point that like France might be, is like under threat of bankruptcy because the king is mismanaging everything. And like, oh, the peasants are rioting. And he's like, why? We live in the most beautiful city. And they're like, they're starving, you idiot. Like, he obviously sucks as a king.
Yeah.
But it's literally just like they come in and they're like, well, we know that his twin's down there. And you're like, I need so much more information.
Tell me how that's going to help. Tell me that.
I need to know how you got here. Like, and it's like literally they show up already with a plan. Then you just like, when did this, what happened? What's going on? How long has this been going on?
Absolutely.
Like it feels like, yes, like the Musketeers are friends, but they don't see each other very often. How did that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with all of this. I think the other thing that really comes to bear is that there's not a lot of swashbuckling in this movie.
Yes.
Certainly a lot less than I was anticipating.
Not enough of people, like, swinging on ropes.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I had this feeling where I was like, wow, they've done a really great job of building these sets. The sets do look great.
Yeah.
But they are all clearly very limited in those spaces because so many of the action sequences feel like there's the cinematographer is peeking around a tight corner and everyone's arms are pulled in towards their bodies and they're just sort of T-Rex fighting it with their hands. There's and that's one of maybe two action sequences that happened in the entire movie. Very little swashing and buckling, which is a disappointment. Not what you're, certainly I remembered there being way more.
I would ask for more swashbuckling, but two times of zero is zero.
I hate that that's the case. I don't believe it.
So then we also get a lot of scenes with Christine and the king, Christine being Raoul's girlfriend who King Louis was like, that one. One, like, I don't think it's this actress's fault. I think it's, this is a script, this is a bad script, and it's also, like, in English, which I don't think she's obviously more fluent in English than I am in French, but I don't think it quite translated.
I agree.
And so, like, we get a lot of that. And then also because she's paired with Leo, who's just, like, thinking about what he's going to put on his burrito once filming is over, you just get these scenes of her being like, well, my lord, I still love my dead fiancé. And he's like, you do? Arg. And then they're like, all right, we'll do that scene again in, like, 5 minutes.
after you've had a full burrito. Very full.
I mean, I do agree that his work as Louis isn't very, I like him as Philippe. I think Philippe is cute. I have a bigger crush on Philippe than I do any moment of Jack in Titanic. And I think it's because he's a little bit pathetic.
You do love a pathetic little man.
Unfortunately, yep.
And, needs to be saved. He's in trouble.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, exactly. I get it.
Yeah.
And also, he likes the little peasant girl, but isn't rude about it.
Exactly. When Philippe shows up, he's constantly fainting and crying all over the place, and I like it.
And also, he makes the good point of just, you're not teaching me to be a king, you're just teaching me to lie.
And they're like, Philippe, we hadn't thought of that. We gotta keep going.
Literally, we just need to replace him, then we'll worry about the rest of it.
Just say that we get to come to work with you. It's fine. It'll be fine somehow.
And then they put him as king, and then it turns out that he's like, I hate science, and the musketeers are jerks. And they're like, oh no. Just they were so worried that he was nicer than King Louis, and then it was just like, oh, he has a bunch of bad views. It's a real like my thing from Splash, where it's like, what if she is a racist fish?
I know. It's an incommunicable moment over podcast, but Kat just did a funny little dance that I really, really made me laugh. I wish you'd been here.
Yeah.
You weren't.
Guys, what are you doing?
I don't know what to tell you. I flat out don't. I mean, it's true though. It's that, you know, as you're watching this plan being enacted, I mean, John Malkovich has a line early on where he says to Jeremy Irons, where he's like, basically, Philippe is like a child, and Jeremy Irons is like, I don't care. And so having that piece of knowledge in the back of your mind the entire time, you're like, how is this going to work, though?
Yeah.
How actually is this going to turn into anything? And it feels as though the denouement of the movie happens so fast.
So fast. I really thought, them getting caught was going to be, the middle of the movie. And it's like, this is what leads up to
the
big thing. Yeah. But no, that's basically it.
Yeah.
They get caught so fast. Philippe was like, please kill me rather than sending me back to jail. And King Louis was like, I suck. I'm going to send you back to jail.
Yes.
And so then the musketeers, right away, they're like, we're going to break him out tonight. I'm like, do you think they might suspect you to do that?
Yeah, it's
maybe
probably.
You have to regroup and think about it a little bit.
We don't need to think about shit.
We don't.
We're ready to do this now. Well, you know what I think a big problem in this movie is that the director is also the writer.
There you go. Yeah.
So there's not a lot of critical analysis of one's own work happening.
Mm.
And I do feel like another voice needed to come in and maybe say things like, if Louis has just told Philippe, I'm going to put you back in the mask in jail, then maybe Philippe would not be yelling, where are you taking me? Where are you taking me in the next scene?
Maybe he'd be a little more upset at his brother.
Yes, exactly. Maybe he might be a bit more aware, especially if what you're leading up to is this man became the greatest king that France has ever known.
Yeah. It's like, he should be a little smarter than this.
Exactly. Spending the entire movie being like, he's an idiot.
For the rest of his reign, he just did what John Malkovich told him to do. And he was like, okay, Dad.
And sometimes Jeremy Irons and never Gerard Depardieu.
Sometimes he asked Jeremy Irons if he could just slip underneath his coat again like they did when they escaped.
Just twirl around under there. I had a memory of him having, though, he opened his cloak to reveal a platform.
Did he?
No.
Oh.
He didn't. I don't know. My brain created that.
Okay.
That there was some sort of platform he was holding. And so when I saw it again, I was like, no, he's just holding onto his tummy like a monkey.
I think he does open it and I think unhooks. There's maybe a rope that hooks onto something. But that would work for the dead dummy, which is was that a real guy?
It's a real guy.
Okay. So then how do you hook up a real living man underneath there? At least with the dead guy, you don't have to worry if you, bang into something.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
What I'm saying is I'm 100% for hiding dead people underneath your cloak.
That wasn't Kat's problem with this scheme. That was not at all the problem with this scheme.
Another part I laughed very hard is, the very end. So they've defeated Louis. Philippe is now King Louis. And then they cut to King Louis and his mother at D'Artagnan, because D'Artagnan has died. They're at his grave. And then like a voiceover is just like, yeah, they sent the original King Louis to the prison, but rumor has it that the king went and let him out and just put him on a farm for the rest of his life. And I'm like, that didn't happen. You just thought like, oh, that would be pretty shitty of him to do to somebody. We should probably undo that.
I loved that.
I'm just like, he's learned his lesson. I'm like, you let that guy out. He is usurping everything.
He's coming right back, like, of course.
He looks like you. He can get anywhere.
Well, what I love too is that there are so many scenes where you see a bunch of the soldiers looking at both of them. And no one in this movie behaves like a human being would and says, why do these two men look alike?
Yeah.
Are they related?
Yeah. Which one's the king?
Are they brothers? Everyone's just like, he's wearing a mask, probably. I assume. We're not going to talk about it so much.
Well, and even when they have like King Louis in the mask and they just sort of walk out and they're like, and King Louis in the mask is like, it's me. They just kind of go like, shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about it. We got the king right here over here.
Forget it. There's a loose undercurrent in this movie of one of D'Artagnan slash Louis' second in command soldiers. I don't actually know what his name is, but a good looking guy who basically is against the musketeers until the end where suddenly he's not.
Mm.
Which feels as though, again, the movie is trying to say something about redemption that it doesn't fully successfully say, and really undermines what I think is supposed to be a rousing finale where the three musketeers have tried to escape with Philippe after saving him. They immediately fail. Aramis, whose idea all of this was, is like, we should die. We should die. Athos, maybe you should go and say that you're not a part of this. Philippe, you should probably
die.
You
should be dead.
Listen, we should all die.
We tried our best.
I think we could all agree that this was your bad and I went along with it, but here we are. And then so they run around the corner and all of the soldiers are like, no, we can't. And so they start shooting at their
face. Oh my God. Just being like, such a display of valor. Yes,
but it's also so funny too to be like, shooting at the feet is still, especially when they're running at you, there's still the potential to badly hurt them.
Yeah. This is like France in the 1700s. You get shot in the foot, you're dead.
You're dying.
It will get infected and you will die.
Anyway, I loved that entire thing where you're supposed to be like, hooray, they're doing it. But instead you're like,
and especially because like they shoot at their feet and it just like brings up a bunch of dust. And it's supposed to be like when the dust clears, are all of them still standing, which they are.
Yeah.
But I'm like, so we didn't get to see any cool thing. It was all behind the dust.
I can't stress enough how much they don't have the budget for fight coaches on this movie.
100%.
Or if they did, they had absolutely no ability to get John Malkovich into fight coach. And I would have loved to have seen them try. Now, I will say, on the positive side, there are pockets of acting in this where you're like, that's why Jeremy Irons is a very good actor. That's why John Malkovich is a very good actor. I know that you feel differently, but for me, there are moments where I'm like, that's why Leonardo DiCaprio is an exceptional actor. And it's not so much moments you can point to so much as like really good line deliveries or even compelling line deliveries of bad dialogue.
Sure.
And you're like, oh man, these men are doing excellent work with a really silly script.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know why any of them are here or what they've done wrong to be here, but I appreciate it.
Well, like with a movie like this, I think my theory is, and I don't think I'm alone in this, is that there's almost no way to tell if a movie's going to be bad while you're filming it.
Yes.
And I'm like, like there's the kinds of things where people are like, read the script to The Matrix, and they're like, that's garbage. And probably during making it, the studio was like, what have we done? And then it came out and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this was sort of the opposite, where people were like, well, there's so much money put into this. And there's so many, like, I'm working with these other actors and, like, look at the care that's been taken with the costumes and the sets and all this. And, like, it's based, like, sort of based on an Alexandre Dumas, like, story. Like, this could be very good. And then just, like, seeing it and being like, no, okay, it didn't quite work out the way we were going
well.
To. Yeah. If you've ever been on a film set, like, it always amazes me just, like, how short takes can be. I know that there are longer ones, but, like, just really, like, be like, action, and then being like, do you want a fork? Sure, thanks. And they're like, cut. And I'm like, that's the take. And I'm like, how do you get it? And then it's like a break for 10 minutes before they set up the next shot. And so it kind of amazes me that you can get into character at all on a film set if that's what you have to do. And so, like, I can see somebody just being like, yeah, I mean, this is just how it is. Like, it slowly comes together, and maybe it's fine. And just then it was over, and they were like, oh, no, it didn't come together.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think that there was probably a lot of, like, you know, its pedigree is very good in terms of the material we're using. There's got to be stuff that to recommend it at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And it did very well. I mean, I do think it was definitely an international success. I'm pretty sure it locally did very well as well. So it was a hit. I mean, it was definitely a hit.
Yeah. But it didn't really last in, like, our collective memory. Like, when you put when somebody like requested this, I was like, oh yeah, that was a movie.
I was like, woo! Excellent.
Oh, a cute boy in trouble.
He's in trouble. What are they going to do?
I hope someone carries him under their cloak.
I wish it had been over the cloak. If only it had been over the cloak, this movie would have been an A++.
Just carried him like a baby.
No, not like a baby, like a man. Like a man. The way a man
The way a man carried. Is carried in your arms.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. What did you love and hate about Man in the Iron Mask?
Oh, God. I mean, I really didn't like this script. It just, like, wasn't doing enough. It, like... I mean, maybe just the whole production. Like, yeah, this needed a lot more swashbuckling, as you said.
Yeah.
Like, I never really got excited about any part of this. It just sort of felt like, and then we're on to this part, and then we're on to this part. I just wish all of it had just been more exciting, and they'd had a thought about what was interesting to see on film. And what I loved the most, I mean, young Peter Sarsgaard was cute.
He was cute.
Honestly, I've never really gotten him, but I saw that and I was like, oh, I get it. He's always been a good actor. He's just never really did it for me. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, yeah, all right. I was really hoping for like a fake out of them to be like, surprise, he wasn't dead at all. This was just a ruse to fool the king.
He's the king.
And then
now.
It's like, he's the king now. Yeah, also, yeah, the fact that both kings are just Gabriel Byrne's kids, so he shouldn't be king. Who's next in line? Why aren't they part of this story? Shouldn't they be furious?
That's a good point, too. I mean, I think by the time they figured that out, they're like, oh, we're just in too deep. Oh, it's just got to be one of them. But Aramis has his head in his hands, just being like, I fucked up so bad.
John Malkovich is like, I thought I retired.
And I'm not even Pope.
I'm not Pope.
This
I'm not
sucks
Russian.
Shit. Forget it.
Someone play poker with me. What did you love and hate, Jocelyn?
Well, I would agree with you. I do think the script assumes a level of familiarity with this material that even if you are familiar with the material, it's not doing a good job of setting up the world of this movie. So one way or the other way, you're kind of boned in the bee. It does feel like a passion project for this guy who I now understand to be the writer of Braveheart. So obviously he was given like a carte blanche to do whatever he wanted, but then he wrote this in Pearl Harbor, so maybe take away his carte blanche.
Yeah.
Maybe carte noire, if I may. I think the script doesn't really deliver, and I do agree that the action sequences are unfortunately really not what you want.
Yeah.
They're so minimal, and they are very blockily shot. A lot of truly tight shots around corners, but also just like uncomfortable angles. You never feel immersed in the action as you want to. Mm-hmm. The most action
choreography, I suppose I would say, is when someone throws a rotten apple at D'Artagnan and they show him cutting it in slow motion in a way that I think is supposed to seem a lot more exciting.
Yeah.
But when you slow down an apple being cut, you're like, yeah, man, I played Fruit Ninja. Like, you're not shit.
Yeah.
What I do like is the actors in it, who I think do a ton to elevate the material. And even though the entire movie does not coalesce into a whole, I did enjoy the experience of watching these actors individually work together, sometimes collectively work together, with the exception of Gerard Depardieu, who is doing his own thing.
He thinks he's still in My Father, the Hero.
I was going to say, he thinks he's in a live action Asterix and everyone else is over in the other room. He was like, what's the budget for whoopee cushions? And they were like, zero. He was like, oh boy, I'm in trouble now. But John Malkovich especially has moments where I'm like, ah, oh, fuck, you're a really good actor. Mm. I mean, honestly, after I watched this, I went and I rewatched Being John Malkovich, which...
It's a wonderful movie.
It's a wonderful movie, and... If, you know, you don't have time for that, just watch the part where an extra hucks a can at his head and yells, hey, Malkovich, think fast. And the sound that John Malkovich makes is so funny and unexpected because it's just, ah! Really, really funny. He has said to, I think it was a urban legend that he wasn't expecting it at all, but it was apparently a moment in the script. He has clarified, like, I just wasn't expecting anyone to get it on the first take because it was dark and they were in a car. And so when that can hit my head and it was also half full, I was like, what the fuck? honestly, I will say, even as the movie was nonsense to watch, I did enjoy the actors. I should also say I got to watch it with my mom, which I so rarely have the opportunity to do these days. And no one in this world is funnier to watch a movie with than my mother.
What'd she do?
Because she has no patience for anything. Like, this is a woman who, sitting through Empire Strikes Back, was like, I am so bored. Who the hell is Yoda? And then when Yoda came out, she was like, who's that? So this, she like, the entire time she was like, this movie's nonsense. I was like, I agree. And she was like, this plan doesn't make any sense. I was like, Mom, I totally agree. And then there's one point where the Queen and Philippe are sitting next to each other at the dance. And the Queen whispers something like, you and I have so much to catch up on. We will meet in the bedroom later. And he's like, good night, Mother. And she just puts her hand on his hand. And my mom just went, incest. And I cried of laughter. If you want to know where a lot of this comes from, it's my mom. That stinker. So that love. Was my favorite part of this movie.
That's my favorite part of the movie.
Incest. Oh, Mom. Man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, thanks to whoever recommended it. It's a long time ago.
It was great. I enjoyed revisiting it. We will get into the part of the show where we talk about all of the things we hate and love in just a moment. But first, we would like to talk about some ways you can support the podcast if you would like. You can, for example, follow us on Instagram. We are at iHiByLie. You can also follow us on Facebook. We are at iHiByLie. You can email us at hatelovepodcast@gmail.com. You can tell your friends to listen. That would be fantastic if you would. You can also do the most impactful thing you can do for us, which is hop on your podcast provider of choice and give us a one-time only rate and review and subscribe. It helps us move up the charts, helps more people find out about us, and we love to read your reviews. And if you would like to support us financially, we have a Patreon.
Yeah, head over to patreon.com/iHiByLie. That's where we put out bonus episodes of our podcast. We put out newsletters, and you get to listen to episodes early and ad-free. When you sign up at the $2 a month level, you get to listen to each episode's a couple days early. Plus, we will thank you on an episode. This week, we're thanking Vera B., Heather Strully, Nicola Fairhead, and Shefali Srivastava. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
At the $5 a month level, that's where you'll get to read the newsletter we put out twice a month on Patreon, where Jocelyn and I take turns writing about our loves and hates for the month of stuff we don't talk about on the podcast. And then the $10 a month level, you get all the previous stuff, plus if there are ads in the podcast, you won't have to listen to them. And also you get to listen to the bonus episodes we put out on Patreon. For this month, we talked about Dracula 2000, Gerard Butler's finest work.
Yes, indeed. Honestly,
a
bit.
I mean, I guess if you don't count Geostorm. And you'll get over 80 bonus episodes the moment you sign up at the $10 level. But if you're one of our listeners who just sort of listens every week, that's totally fine too. We're so glad that you're here.
We love that you are. Thank you.
But one more time, patreon.com/ihibaile. We'd appreciate it.
We would.
And now on to what we are loving or hating this week. And Jocelyn is on the theme song.
Ride around under a coat. That's what a cute boy does. Hate and love.
Oh, that's the whole thing.
Short and sweet.
Great.
Short and sweet. What are you loving or hating?
So a couple weeks ago, I talked about my love of Love Island.
Yes.
Yes. So the problem with Love Island is that it is not on Wednesdays or Saturdays. And I know in the U.S. you can watch on Saturdays sort of like, here's some clips we didn't show. We don't have that in Canada for some reason. They don't show it. So Wednesdays and Saturdays, I'm just like, what do I do with myself? And then I remembered I didn't watch the Love Island games last fall, which is when it's very similar to Love Island, except now they're doing challenges for money. And so I just watched all of it, and man, that really scratched an itch on Wednesday and Saturday. Because you get idiots making out and getting mad at each other, but now they're getting mad at each other for knocking each other out of the competition. Now, here's my question to you. Say, not that we would, but say you and I went on some kind of competitive reality show like Survivor or Love Island Games.
Oh, yes.
If I made a move that meant that I stayed in the game, but you got evicted, would our friendship be over?
Ooh, okay. I would say this is very, this depends a lot on the friendship. Because for you to do something like that, it is unprecedented in our friendship. And it would be a shocking moment. And one we would probably have some trouble with, but not necessarily an immediate game over.
Okay.
Unless my reasons to do it were like very strong and urgent and you knew that and you still did it.
Okay.
What is your answer?
I mean, my opinion is that we should have a talk about it beforehand, but I'd probably say to you like, you're my best friend. I think our friendship transcends this show. That being said, if I have a chance to win money and it involves kicking you out, I'm kicking you out.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And I know some people don't think the same as me, but there was one of just like somebody kicking their friend out because they were competition. They were like, and I want to win.
Right.
And you are part of one of the strongest couples. And so I'm going to kick you out. And that guy was like, I had your back. You chose this show over our friendship. When like, I don't know if we will ever be friends again. And I was like,
yeah, that's a bit extreme.
And I was just like, if you threw me out and I was like, I don't get to win the money, I would be disappointed and I'd probably be a little upset. But at no point would I be like, you chose the show over me. I'd be like, no, that's what I signed up for.
See, I think I was misunderstanding because I think I thought that you meant it was like, you and I were a couple in this, and then you kicked me out of our coupledom. Why did you do that?
No.
But if we're both playing the game, then no, of course you're going to play the game. It would be ridiculous to sign up for a game with you and then be like, why are you playing the game?
Yes, that's my opinion.
No. I do agree. With this new context, I do agree that you can't sign up for something and then personally hold it against somebody when they participate in the rules of the game that you've both signed up for.
Yes, exactly. That's my opinion.
Yes.
And this goes, I'm going to quote, this was a long time ago. This was during, I think, possibly the first Survivor All-Stars season.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was said during, in a Television Without Pity recap that I'm going to quote. But basically in the show, Boston Rob made it so that he had to kick out Lex, I think. And they were friends and Lex basically put the whole how dare you put this show, $1 million in front of our friendship kind of bullshit, and so didn't vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the recap was just like, it's like if somebody says to you, if you eat pancakes, we're no longer friends. And then you go, that's a stupid rule, and you eat pancakes anyway. And the person is like, I can't believe you like pancakes more than our friendship. You're like, that's not what that is. It's that you made a stupid rule that I decided not to follow.
Yes.
And that's kind of what it, anyway. But there's plenty of idiocy like that on this show, and I love it. So anyway, Love Island Games, if you haven't watched it yet, go back and watch it. Get in there. And there's not going to be a season this year because of the dumb Olympics. I'm so mad.
Yes. How dare these athletes perform?
Well, I understand that it's like a Peacock show, but this is all streaming. Just still do the show and let the people who want to watch it, watch it.
You're right.
None of the people on Love Island Games are going to the Olympics.
Kat is furious.
I can't be... I can't overstate it that this season of Love Island USA has been incredible, to the point that Rolling Stone actually wrote an article about how amazing it's been and how the ratings are like through the roof. Anyway, sorry, I'm going on too much about Love Island, but I'm loving it so much. How about you, Jocelyn?
Okay, I have not seen the movie yet, so this is not a review of the movie, but the marketing for Long Legs has been very good. And so Long Legs is the new movie by Oz Perkins, son of Anthony Perkins of Psycho fame, also star of Legally Blonde. He was the weird guy. And it's a movie about serial killers. It stars Micah Monroe and also Nicolas Cage. If you're not aware, they have conducted a lot of the marketing campaign around not showing Nicolas Cage's face.
I told Craig, I was like, yeah, it's a Nicolas Cage movie. He's like, I had no idea about that.
Well, apparently you barely know when you see it too, because he's wearing a lot of stuff on his face. The movie, I hear, is quite good. I think the reviews were rapturous before it came out, and that might have set the hype too high. Okay. So I think what it is actually just like an extremely tense movie from start to finish with some plot wibbly wobbles. But honestly, they've scored, I think, the biggest success in Neon Studios history.
Oh, great.
So well done on that marketing campaign. You figured out the secret is always just keeping a bit of a secret to the best of your ability about the way the monster looks.
Yeah.
That's what made me interested.
The opposite of that is basically the marketing for The Invitation from a few years ago that was like showing vampires and fights that I was like, I hope that all happens in the first 45 minutes. And they're like, no, this happens in the last five. And you're like, great.
Well,
thanks.
That's
thanks
not
everyone.
What I want. So thank you very much, please. Yeah. Now, I will say the thing I don't like very much is people immediately going onto Twitter and being like, not that scary. Everyone, I would like to invite us all to become more familiar with a little add-on to the end of our sentences. For me. Not that scary. For me.
For me.
Perfectly legitimate. Your own opinion. Not that scary is determining other people's experience. And it's okay. In fact, I invite everybody to share more of their opinions online about movies and TV, I should clarify. Less about everything else, more about this. But you don't have to tell everybody what to feel. Just say, for me. But good job, Long Legs. I'm glad to see it doing well. I'm excited to nonstop troll Reddit until I find a picture of Nicolas Cage's face and then never sleep again. And that is our show. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Instagram at jgeds.
You can follow me on Instagram at katangus and the show on Instagram at ihibailai. We'd like to thank Yusu Kim and Song Finch for a very excellent theme song. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/ihibailai. Our Patreon is at patreon.com/ihibailai. And please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we are talking about Reign of Fire.
We are
dragons. Matthew McConaughey is there.
Gerard Butler is
Gerard
there.
Gerard Butler is there. It is not his finest work.
As stated, that's Geostorm. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
I Hate It But I Love It is produced by Andrew Ivamy as part of the From Superheroes Network. For more great podcasts like this, as well as webcomics, articles, web series, and so much more, visit fromsuperheroes.com.